Welcome to the 56th episode of the Frank Online Marketing Show. I'm Temma Frank, your host. I remember when my first child, Ben, was maybe a year and a half old. It was late afternoon. He'd already had his afternoon nap. But he came to me and said, "I want bed." Now, he could speak a little bit, and I thought, well, gee, why would he want to go to bed now? And I said, well, it's not really bedtime yet, Ben. Are you sure you want to go to bed? And he said, bed. So I took him over to his crib and started to put him in, and he burst into tears and said, "I want bed." Well, I finally clued in. What he was trying to say was, "I want bread." Well, today's guest is Laura Berg, who's a fellow Canadian who founded a company called My Smart Hands that teaches parents how to teach their babies and toddlers to do sign language during that frustrating stage before they've learned to talk, or in Ben's case, to talk clearly. Laura's website, My Smart Hands, has become phenomenally successful. Really, it started with her publishing a YouTube video of her experiences teaching her daughter to use sign language. Her YouTube channel now has over 25 million views, and she's selling a range of products. She's got a couple of hundred people across North America who are certified to use her techniques to teach baby sign language to parents, and is doing incredibly well. It's a very exciting story, and I'm sure you will enjoy hearing it. We do have a couple of fairly emotional moments towards the sort of the last half, so hang in there if you can, and I will chat with you at the end.
My name's Laura Berg, and I own a company called My Smart Hands, and it's a company that teaches parents how to use American Sign Language to communicate with their hearing children.
And why would people do that?
Well, the number one reason is it really reduces your frustration and the baby's frustration because they're able to communicate to you through the use of signs before they can speak. So that stage between where they're getting really frustrated but they can't yet communicate to you, it really helps bridge that frustrational period.
So why is it easier for them to learn sign language than to learn to talk?
Well, they're just able to sign before they can talk. So they can use their gross motor skills with their hands to gesture before their fine motor skills of language comes in, or speech comes in, sorry. They can use language, but not speech right away.
Okay. So what got you started in this business? Was it something you were trying to do then with your own child?
Well, I started because I used to be a teacher, and when I was researching the literacy program at our school and different techniques to use within that program, I came across a great study that used sign language with children who were having trouble spelling. And the more research I did on ASL and literacy, I kept coming up with articles and research papers on using sign language with babies. And it just made total sense to me because babies want to communicate to you. They just don't have the ability. So if you give them simple gestures to use, then they can communicate quite easily with you. And so I knew when I had my daughter, I was going to do that with her.
Hmm. So at what age do they start being able to do this?
They can do it as young as 4 months.
Wow.
My son started signing at 6 months, and my daughter was 9 months.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So when they're signing, they're signing for things like a drink or some more of something?
Yeah, milk is a big one. So my son started signing milk at 6 months, and it was really great because he never cried when he was hungry. He just signed to me. So it was great. A story I always love telling about my daughter, though, and the biggest aha moment as to why I'm doing this was one time she was eating Cheerios in her high chair, and she's throwing them on the floor and signing more, more, more. And I'd give her more, and she'd throw them on the floor. I said, well, then you don't want more Cheerios. What do you want? And she signed more cheese together.
Huh.
So
interesting.
Isn't it amazing? At 10 months, she put together a two-word sentence through signs.
Cool.
And I hadn't offered her cheese during that snack time. There was no cheese in sight, so she couldn't have pointed to it. And thinking, if she didn't have signs, I would have assumed she was done I would have put her down and she would have thrown a big temper tantrum because she wasn't done. She just wanted something salty versus something sweet.
Wow. I got to tell you, when my kids were babies, it started with the first one who both of my kids were kind of skinny as babies. So I was always trying to get them to eat more. And we created something that we called cheese Cheerio sandwiches. Basically, I take these little tiny, tiny cubes of cheese and squish them into the middle of a Cheerio. And he loved them.
Oh, that's funny.
So,
that's a good tip.
Yeah, eventually, I was making double-decker, triple-decker cheese Cheerio sandwiches because it's really time-consuming.
Yeah, seriously.
But that is a great story. So, okay, so you did it with your own kids, and then you decided this would be a cool thing to share with others.
Exactly. So I wanted to stay at home with my daughter. I always jokingly call myself an accidental entrepreneur because I didn't set out to become an entrepreneur. It was a means to an end. So I lived in a major city and we needed to have two incomes. So I needed to either go back to work or figure out a way to make money so that I could stay at home with her. And so I did. And I never imagined that it would grow into the business that it has. But I'm so fortunate. I absolutely love, love, love being an entrepreneur.
So tell me more about, you know, what you started offering and how that grew and evolved over time.
Right. So I started offering an 8-week course to other parents. So what I did is I put together a curriculum, which was easy for me to do because I have an educational background. I was a teacher, so I've planned many, many lessons. And I put together just basically classes that are built on themes, and I had my husband make the music for the program. So when we teach the signs, we put those signs that we learned into songs, so it's fun for the kids. So I created like a Mummy and Me type class.
Right.
And I started doing it, just teaching parents out of my home, out of my living room. They'd come and take a class, and it was super fun. But at the time, not a lot of people had heard of the concept, or they heard of the concept of baby signing, but they hadn't actually seen a baby sign.
Right.
My daughter was a huge signer, so I sat her in a high chair one day, and I took out the video camera, and I, you know, quizzed her on all the signs that she knew, and I posted that video to YouTube, because I thought what I could do is I could put that video on my website as a promotion for my business, but also as a way to tell people, look at what babies are capable of. So I could say, oh, you should check out my website and you can see a video. And from that video really was the major reason my business grew into what it is today. Because I had people contact me and say, I want to be a part of your program. How can I be an instructor for you?
Huh.
And I'd say, program? I don't have a program. And so I made a more professionally structured program that I could package and other teachers could easily follow. And then I had parents email me and say, I want to take a class with you, but I live in Florida, or I live in California, or I'm in Vancouver, or wherever. And so it really grew from there. It grew from me creating this program so that other people could teach it, and started developing the brand online by posting all of these videos to YouTube.
Now, just because some people won't be reading my site, they'll just be listening to this. What is the URL of the website?
For my website?
Is
mysmarthands.com.
Okay. And so what do you offer right now? So you've got videos, you've got instruction, like classes people can sign up for.
That's right. I have a book that I wrote last year, a how-to manual, which is available online or in stores across North America.
Okay.
I have iPhone and Android apps.
Wow.
I have flashcards that are available on my website.
So of all these different means of getting the information across, what do you find is the most popular?
As far as marketing or products that sell?
Products that sell.
My apps.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, you think about it, it's people can download these things all over the world. They're inexpensive. And it's delivered immediately.
Right. So what was involved in getting those apps done? I mean, I've heard that it can be quite expensive to actually build good apps.
It can be. The first set of apps that I did with a friend and as a partner almost. So we just split the earnings. And then the subsequent apps that I've designed, I've just hired people to do them. And really, you can work with all sorts of different levels of app developers as far as pricing goes. I have worked with people overseas, which can be good, but can be also difficult. Just time difference, language difference. Yes. But I have worked with some people overseas that have been successful. And I've also found that young kids sort of fresh out of school who haven't yet got into the industry, but they're really incredibly smart and keen, are great to work with. And I've been working with somebody for the past couple of years on my apps now.
That's interesting, because I know with websites, it can often be a real killer if you hire the kids straight out of school, because they don't know enough. They know specific things. But I guess developing an app is a much smaller project than developing a contemporary website.
Exactly.
Now, when you're hiring people to do technical things like developing an app or coding a website, how do you as a non-programmer know who's likely to be good?
Usually I'll ask for other projects that they've worked on so I can look to see their quality of work.
That makes sense, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
And when did you start, when did you put up that first YouTube video that became so successful?
In 2007, January.
People would have an interest in what you're offering for a relatively short time, right? Because then their child gets past that.
Yep.
So you're constantly having to find new customers. Is that accurate?
Yes, which is a good thing, actually.
Why?
My customer base is constantly replenishing itself because people are having babies every day.
Right, okay.
You know, and
have you thought about adding on products that would be appeal to these parents as their kids get past the signing stage?
Well, we're in the process right now of doing a level 3 curriculum, which is designed for preschools. And so it's more of a workbook structure that the kids who have language can sort of dive into more in-depth sign language learning. But really, I mean, after that, it then becomes learning the language, which I really don't feel qualified to teach. So it's really up until that age, but we're developing something for the earlier sort of preschool years.
Okay. So what have been your biggest challenges in getting this to the point that it's at today?
I think the major challenge is just dealing with growth in my business.
Okay. In what way?
Well, it's just been me that has been managing the business. And so I really think if I had somebody to do a lot of the jobs or to advance things further,
right,
it would be a lot bigger. I mean, and don't get me wrong, it's a very large company. I'm the largest big signing company in Canada.
Wow.
But I think in business, a tricky point is you're almost too big for yourself, but you're not yet big enough to hire somebody.
Yes, I know that feeling.
Right? That was the tipping point for me. So I finally had to say, I'm going to allocate these funds to a salary and hire somebody because I can't do it all on my own. So that's been the biggest thing I think that many, many entrepreneurs face, is that point that you're going to dive in and expand, whether it be hiring somebody or renting a location or what have you. So that was the biggest one for me.
And when did you hire somebody?
I just hired somebody. Well, so I started with hiring assistants 2 years ago, and then I've just hired a manager this past year who's just really running the business now, which is fantastic for me. I always joke with my friends and say, I'm semi-retired. They love that. And
So what is your role versus the manager's role then?
So she does all the interviewing of new instructors. She sets them all up on the website and mentors them when needed. And,
okay.
You know, deals with orders coming in and basically the running of the business. And I'm doing all of the creative. So I still manage our YouTube account, which I love doing. So it's creating new content for the YouTube channel,
okay.
Which of course now I make money from YouTube. So it's a good source.
From advertising.
That's right.
Okay.
I've been very fortunate. I've set my business up in a way where I have a lot of residual income.
Wow.
Which is every entrepreneur's dream. Because if you think about it,
yes.
my apps make money. My structure program makes money without me having to do much. You know, my book is selling great in stores. You know, so a lot, my YouTube channel makes money. I make videos because I really enjoy it. It allows me to connect on a personal level with my customers and my clients.
Right.
So I love that. I love being accessible.
Yep.
And I love providing the information for free that people can access. Yes, I make money because of the advertising, but people don't have to pay for it. They can go on YouTube and access it for free because a lot of people can't afford our courses or can't afford to go out and buy our books or what have you. And so I really didn't want to make it only for people who could afford it.
We talked about the apps being very successful in terms of sales. What about just generally building awareness? And particularly I'm interested in, there are other companies out there offering similar stuff.
Yep.
So how did you differentiate yourself?
I think the biggest thing was just being active on YouTube very early on. What I do is such a visual thing that video played a really big role in it. And what it also did is it shows people that I'm a mom and that I'm human. And, you know, people always look at me and they feel that connection because they can see me. They hear my voice. They see me interact with my children. And so they're very loyal and dedicated to me versus another company.
And do you have sort of online discussion groups or forums or things to help with that connection?
We have a Facebook group that we maintain and interact with people. And I personally answer emails that come in. And I really enjoy that connection with my customers.
Okay. So on the Facebook group, do most people who are there have already heard about you through YouTube or some other method? Or is the Facebook group itself a way of really building your audience?
It's a bit of both. I think a lot of people have heard of us. You know, we have over 200 instructors across North America, so we're very well known. The brand's very well known, and through YouTube, and you know, but some people just come across us because they have been doing baby signing on their own, and they've stumbled upon our group, and you know, it's a great resource. We post a lot of information and you know, fun videos with songs and whatnot.
So over 200 instructors. Wow. So how do you make sure that they're doing it right? Do you have any kind of control over that? Or?
Well, as much as I can, really. It's hard being that they're not in the same city, so I can't just you know, drop in. All of my instructors have to have taken a formal ASL course, so they have to have a level of proficiency. And then I have an online tests that they have to pass as well, excuse me. And then just we offer tons of support. So we have, you know, we check in with everybody monthly and, you know, we have a very structured curriculum that they follow. So to the best of my ability, I can maintain hopefully a level of consistency across all of our instructors.
Laura, my mind is boggled by how much you accomplish and you've still got, how old are your kids now?
I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old.
So how the heck do you manage it all?
I know.
I mean, I'm serious. Like, how do you set priorities for your time? How much sleep do you actually get? You know, do you have time for a personal life? Can you elaborate on those things for us?
I know. It's really tricky. I feel very fortunate because I built my business around being at home with my children.
Yes.
And so I always say to my daughter, you are the reason why we have the life that we have and I have the business that I have was because you were my motivation. And she's such a part of the business too. You know, she's in the videos and she really enjoys. Now she teaches like the signs in the videos. She really enjoys being involved in that. And, you know, I always jokingly say, oh, you know, one day you can take over my smart hands. And you don't. So here I am, you know, having these visions. But, you know, when my daughter was in school and I had my son, I hired somebody like a babysitter that came in 18 hours a week. So I for sure had 18 hours a week during the day that I could work on my business. And then it was a bit of, you know, nighttime and weekend work as well.
Yeah.
But it certainly wasn't, you know, I remember being, putting my kids to bed at 8 o'clock and then working from 8 until midnight some nights.
Yes. I was working on my first book when I was pregnant with my first child, and I also ended up hiring a babysitter for him to come in. My office was up on the third floor of our house. It was a tall, skinny Victorian house, and it was great because mommy would disappear behind the door and be gone. But I used to tell people I came down for baby breaks instead of coffee break.
Yeah. Oh, it's true.
Except for when he went through a stage where he really cried when I had to leave again. So then I stopped for a while. Not if it's going to cause you more trauma than it's worth, kid.
Exactly. Or the babysitter more trauma.
Yeah, exactly. Have you had to get any financing, or have you just totally bootstrapped it?
I have been very fortunate to be able to totally bootstrap it.
Okay.
I don't know if you're aware, I was on the Dragon's Den.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, so I went on the Dragon's Den, and I was offered a deal with Kevin and Arlene.
Right.
And which was a great opportunity for me. And then just in the end, after going through all the due diligence and whatnot, it didn't work. It didn't make sense.
I hear that so much from people. I wonder how many of their deals really go through.
Yeah, it's not a lot, I think.
Yeah.
But it was great because I, you know, I managed to sit on a few panels with Kevin, and as an entrepreneur who he offered a business deal to, and we did a few things like that. So it was really great for me in brand exposure.
Yes.
But in the end, I went on to sort of help with product development and specifically a book. And you know, months after I was on the Dragon's Den, I ended up getting an agent, and she ended up getting a book deal with Penguin in the U.S. So for a Canadian author to get a U.S. book deal is a big deal.
That's fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. And so in the end, I didn't need the money that they were offering.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I've been lucky enough to be able to earn money and then put it back into the business in order to grow the business. And a lot of the things that I've done they weren't that expensive. So I didn't need to rent a building. You know, I didn't need to buy tons of machinery. My business was really low cost, low overhead. So I was fortunate in that way.
Yes.
And
so now how many hours a week? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say just a tip for entrepreneurs as well. Something that I learned is, you also have to look at, when I was looking at, say, printing, I could print manuals for higher amount, less profit, but in lower quantities. Or I could print in higher quantities with a lower cost and higher profit margin. But that meant higher out of pocket initially up front. So in the beginning, I just did like Xerox copies where they cost me a lot of money, so my profit margins were lower. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a bigger upfront cost.
Right.
And then when I had enough money that I saw the manuals were selling and I had some money invested in the business, I then could make the decision to print at the higher quantity and have larger profit margins. But for entrepreneurs, you don't necessarily need to jump into that big of a commitment at first. You know, you can.
That's an excellent point. Start small and test it. See what's working.
That's right.
So what are some of the surprising things that you've learned or discovered along the way?
One thing that I love is networking with other entrepreneurs and the support that I get. Another thing is just the learning curve of an entrepreneur is unbelievable. I didn't come from a business background. I had an educational degree, so I had no experience in business, in marketing, in anything. And so it was a huge learning curve for me. And things that I learned, for example, is when you do business with a friend, always have a contract. Even a family member, have a contract in place. Because you may be the best of friends on day one when you begin working together, and things may change. And if you don't have a contract in place, that could really hurt you.
Yeah.
Another thing that I learned is if a lot of entrepreneurs, they'll do sort of a bartering, or they'll do, you know, a percentage rather than a complete payout. for service, and which I have done.
Yeah.
Now I've learned that when I worked with a friend, for example, I gave them a percentage from now until forever.
Hmm.
What I would do now, if I were working on percentage, which I would never do at this point anyway, but if I were to, I would have a endpoint.
Okay.
So what I'm talking about is, let's say if you hired somebody, like if you talked to your friend and said, look, this job is going to cost you $10,000 for you to pay me to do. But you don't have $10,000. So you say, well, I'm going to give you a percentage of the product or what have you.
Yep.
So what you might do is say, look, I'll give you a percentage of the product until you earn $40,000.
Right.
Like a bigger amount, not $10,000, because that's not realistic, because they're taking a risk and you know, who knows how long they're going to do it. But to have an end point, mm-hmm. that's me personally, something that I learned that I would feel more comfortable with.
Well, I would think also that would be important if you ever think you want to sell the company, because
exactly.
they're not going to want to have liabilities in there
yeah.
on an ongoing basis.
That's right.
And did you run into any problems in terms of doing business with a friend?
Yes.
You presumably don't want to talk about it.
No, I went into my app developer was one of my best friends.
Okay.
And, ended up suing me for $500,000.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And we didn't have a contract in place. Everything was really just sort of laissez-faire. And, yes, we're friends. Let's do this project. Yay.
Oh, no.
So, you know what? In the end, we settled, and I am better for it. And it was a really amazing learning experience, and it cost me a lot of money that – not $500,000, thankfully. But, you know, going through the legal process, if somebody sues you, you don't have any choice. You can't say, no, I don't want to do this. You have to just do it, and you have to fight it, and the legal fees are ridiculous, like what you
yes.
have to pay lawyers. And so in the end, you know, we ended up agreeing on a settlement, and it cost me a lot of money in 2 years of my life of
wow.
misery. But I look at it this way. This experience has prevented me from making an even greater catastrophic decision later on, because I didn't have this experience, right? We learn from our experiences. Mm. And so I've really learned from this experience. And I do a lot of speaking around North America on entrepreneurship and business. And so now in my talks, I can share with other entrepreneurs my experience and sort of warn them about what they need to do, because people don't like talking contracts and business with,
right.
with well, at all, but even with friends. You know, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so if I could warn other entrepreneurs to learn from my mistakes, you know, then it's great.
So the speaking gigs that you're doing across North America, how has that happened? Is that something you've actively sought out, or?
You know what? It was sort of, again, like a very natural thing. There's a conference in Toronto, a blogging conference called Blissom, and they were looking for a video blogger or people who had experience with video.
Okay.
Well,
yep.
I was on the video train long before most bloggers were. I mean,
yep.
my YouTube channel now has over 25 million views.
Whoa.
So I was the expert in that area. And I come from an interesting position because, yes, we do have a blog and I have a business. So I'm the best of both worlds. So I can mm-hmm. speak at social media conference on using business in blogging, but I can also speak on using it to brand yourself and grow a business and make yourself the expert in your field.
Mm-hmm. What would you advise an entrepreneur who's starting to get into trying to sell stuff online now? I mean, as you say, you fortunately started really using the YouTube thing very early before most people had got on. Now we're at a stage where everything seems so overcrowded.
Mm-hmm.
How can somebody stand above the noise now, do you think?
I think that it's still a matter of getting out there. Social media is a big one. I think any business who isn't using social media is really missing out. the connections that I've made on social media have been amazing. Really? Other entrepreneurs are really supportive of you on social media. I learn about conferences and tweet ups, events that you can go and network with other people. And it's incredible how you'll meet other amazing entrepreneurs and they'll say, oh, you know who you have to talk to? One thing leads to another. For example, when I was speaking at Blistem, I was on a panel with this person, Jeff Pulver, from New York. He was the founder of Vonage. And he puts on these conferences called 140, where they're all sort of feel-good conferences and social media and all of that stuff. And we were talking about viral video. And I said, you know, it doesn't matter if you make a viral video if it's not appropriate for your business. Who cares, right? Like, I could make a viral video of a potato chip I found that looked like, you know, George Bush, and it would go viral, but it has nothing to do with my business. Mm-hmm. And I said, so what your goal should be is to just create a video that is relevant to your clientele and your business. And if it goes viral, fantastic. If it doesn't, it still has meaning for your consumers or for you or for your business. And
right.
I was telling a story about when I first started out, I had posted my video to YouTube, and I never realized the impact me doing so would have. I thought it would bring awareness. I thought it would help promote my business. Little did I know the connections that I would make from doing this. So I had a mom email me and tell me that she, at the time, had a son who was 2.5, autistic, nonverbal. Life was incredibly frustrating for them. He was throwing lots of temper tantrums and not communicating with them at all. Somebody suggested signing to him. She Googled it. Our video came up. He heard my daughter's voice, came in the room, and watched our video over and over for 45 minutes.
Wow.
At the end of the 45 minutes, he turned to his mom and he started signing to her. And it was the first form of communication she'd had with her son ever.
Wow.
And she said, I just want to tell you, you and your family are angels to us. And I sat on my computer and I bawled my eyes out. And so I was telling the story at this conference. And of course, everyone's getting choked up and teary as well. Well, this one woman stands up in the conference and takes the mic and she says, I just want to tell you, I'm one of the people who you've touched. And she shares her story. And of course, I'm now bawling. Now the whole room is bawling. And Jeff turns to me and says, you need to come and share your story at the 140 in New York. And so just getting out there and networking and socializing can lead you to other things. So then here I am, this little Canadian girl in New York City, and I was on stage directly after Deepak Chopra.
Wow.
So I'm in the green room with Deepak Chopra thinking, is this my life?
And so did you manage to have a conversation while you two were in the green room?
Yeah, it was great. I got my picture taken with him, and, you know, it's just really, really casual. It was nothing, you know, out of the ordinary, but it was pretty an exceptional experience. And so I always find that whenever you're out there and you're interacting and you're mingling with people, you never know what's going to happen next. You never know the connection you're going to make.
Well, and that's, I think, one of the really interesting things that is hitting home for me more and more is, despite social media, despite all the possibilities of communication through the internet, still the face-to-face meeting is what has the biggest impact.
Yes.
So you still really need to get out there and go to conferences, go to events, and network in a physical way.
Definitely.
Is there anything else I should have asked you and haven't?
One other tip that I would give entrepreneurs is in networking is to try and find a mastermind group.
Okay.
A group of your peers who are not obviously your competitors, but who are in business, who are not your friends per se, because sometimes your friends who have 9-to-5 jobs don't understand the trials and tribulations that you go through.
Yeah.
But to have a group that you can share information with and share your trials and tribulations and get support that you feel safe sort of sharing those intimate details with is amazing. I have a great mastermind group. I would not be able to have survived my lawsuit without them and the support, you know. And also they might have information for you and for your business that you might not even know existed. You might not even know to ask. So I highly recommend that.
And so is your mastermind group all local people or is that done by phone or Skype or whatever?
We actually meet by Skype. We are fairly local, but we find that with being an entrepreneur, it's hard to schedule everyone's to yes. get in and meet each other. So we do a Google Hangout actually with each other.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
This is wonderful to have talked to you. I think your story is truly impressive and inspiring. And I wish you continued success.
I've got to admit, I kind of envy her that she's actually got to the point now where she's got a manager who's running the day-to-day stuff, and she gets to do the fun stuff like adding new content to YouTube, which she really enjoys. It is an awesome story to watch how quickly and successfully she's grown, but also to realize that it's not without some pretty major downs as well as ups. And that's just part of life as an entrepreneur. What have been some of the biggest ups or downs you've had in growing your business? I'd love to hear them. Why don't you go to frankonlinemarketing.com and tell us, share your stories. If you aren't comfortable leaving your story there but would like to chat, you can always reach me toll-free at 1-866-544-9262. And of course, you can always email me, Tema, T-E-M as in mother, A, at frankonlinemarketing.com. And you can find me on Twitter, Facebook. There is a Frank Online Marketing Facebook page, as well as my own personal page. And for those of you who are in super business mode, LinkedIn is also a great way to reach me. That's it for today. I look forward to chatting with you next week. And I do hope to hear from you in the meantime. Bye.